Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Wow, that was a short hello.
Oh. Hello, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 65 is being brought to you once again by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. I paused at 65 because I was about to say I'm going to have a birthday coming up in a few months. It feels like I'm going to be that, but it's about a decade before that. So we are once again broadcasting from beautiful Lawrenceville, Georgia, hopefully soon to be coronavirus free.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Georgia, Gwinnett County, Lawrenceville. So not sure that's going to happen, but it's just interesting how that news has kind of fallen by the wayside with everything else going on. So I told you before we came on, I'm going to let you lead the way a little bit more.
Yeah. So we always kind of struggle every week about what are we going to talk about? What's new in the news? That kind of thing. For the past 2 months now, there's not really been anything totally new in the news because everything is circled around Corona, and now everything is kind of socially circled around, I guess, police brutality, racism, and kind of right. All that stuff that's going
inequality.
On right now.
Yeah.
So I wanted to maybe take some time this podcast and just kind of revisit some of the old stories that we talked about. And I don't have them brought up, but just kind of remembering them off the top of my head.
Okay. So before we get into that, mm-hmm. along the same lines, Dr. Reese, mm-hmm. who we gave a shout out to last week. So yep. She came back and worked this past week at Russell Ridge. And definitely enjoyed getting to see her smiling face and interact with her again. She sent me an article, I guess that the night. Did you get the article too?
Yeah, she forwarded to both
okay.
of us.
Okay. So,
While you're looking for the article, so back up, right? So, again, this whole rehashing of Corona, it's never gone away, but we tried to somewhat limited in our conversations here on our podcast.
Right.
We're still living it every day here in the practice and in our personal lives. But with that being said, we are, somewhat excited to announce that this week we're merging back our staff here at Russell Ridge.
Right.
We are merging back the doctors and kind of pulling them from where they've been sheltered in other locations specifically. So yeah. To your point, Dr. Reese, who typically works in our Johns Creek location, was back late last week. And she was working here in our Russell Ridge Hospital.
Yeah.
So starting today, actually, we've started mixing our staff right. a little bit more. And so that's like our phase one to normalcy.
Yeah, trying to get back to a normal schedule. We've been very adamant about keeping the staff separate in mm-hmm. case we got, quote unquote, the virus inside the hospital. Somebody got infected and exposed one team. We would be able to completely take that team off of rotation
right.
and have coverage with the other team.
So it's not that exposure is not possible anymore. It's just that there's more information now about what to do if there is
better
an exposure.
Testing.
Yeah.
And I think we're understanding more. Although, to me, the information is still, we're not ever going to know the real truth. Mm-hmm. So Pat Dye, I've been telling everybody I know this story. Pat Dye was the coach of the Auburn Tigers, football coach. Back 15 years ago for like 25 years, very successful.
Okay.
Very well known, very well respected. Well, I heard this past week that he died at the age of 80, and he died due to complications of kidney failure, liver failure, and they did state that he did test positive for coronavirus as well. What they didn't okay. do was say Pat Dye, legendary coach of the Auburn Tigers, died of coronavirus.
So you're thinking that we're somewhat media-wise, we're progressing past like Corona equals death sentence to everyone
yeah.
and that kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm very hopeful that my train of thought is going to kind of play out. But I do think most of the people that have died of coronavirus had other diseases. That's why it affects the... I don't think it affects the very young, but it affects the debilitated, the very elderly.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we'll wait and see. But, yeah, so that was a little bit of a digression.
Yeah, so anyways, we're remixing our staff. We haven't quite opened the doors to the clients just yet.
Right.
That'll be kind of our next phase.
Maybe within a couple of weeks, we're kind of thinking.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be kind of limited, right? We talked about like still offering curbside for those that are uncomfortable, but those that really want to come in, allowing them to come in to the building and kind of escort them into an exam room.
Strongly encourage that they wear a mask to protect us.
Yep.
And we're going to wear a mask or face shields to protect them.
For sure.
And yeah, kind of keep that distancing thing going on and limiting contact in the hospital. So it's just going to be a process. And that's what we're seeing here in Georgia. Every week that goes by, people get a little more relaxed. Mm-hmm. I hope that we're not too relaxed. I don't think we are. But we're slowly kind of getting back to what the new normal is going to look like.
So we started talking about this because we were going to bring up all of some of the old stories or news stories that kind of first came about. But what you were talking about is Dr. Reese.
Yeah, one of the first stories she must have gone back and listened to all of our podcasts, because wasn't this within the first 5 or 6 podcasts that we did?
I don't know. I mean, to be honest with you, they all kind of jumble in my mind a little bit. And I know we've talked about it at least twice.
So the email we got is titled Dog killing cane toads are back as rain draws them out of burrows, from the Miami Herald. And she put the link in, and her message was, "The poisonous toads are back!" Exclamation. And so I remembered, and I reread it just before we came on, just to make sure. But cane toads or bufo, B-U-F-O, toads, they have this bufo toxin glands kind of behind the back of their eyes. That these are just big old sluggish toads that are coming out evidently once again in Florida, because it's breeding season and it's rainy.
It
and
seems the weather, yeah.
Yeah, everything is in perfect climate alignment.
Appropriate, yeah.
But they're harmless to people. They're a little bit of a distraction, annoyance maybe, but for pets, dogs in particular, they're going to see this big old toad kind of hopping around or maybe just laying around on the ground, and they're going to want to go play with it, and eventually they're going to mouth it. And if they do that, the toxin, the story didn't read this, but I recall that it causes a lot of hypersalivation, but also neurotoxic and cardiotoxic. So can cause seizures and other neurologic events, and then also can cause major heart problems.
Leading to death.
Up to, yeah. Including, but not necessarily always death, yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you, Dr. Reese, for that. Shout out for 2 weeks in a row, Dr. Merrill Reese.
For sure. I'm glad I don't have cane toads in my yard, because my dog would definitely pick them up.
Your dog would definitely
probably
destroy a cane toad.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the other stories. Do you remember we talked about the rats in New York City?
Yep. About, this was early on.
Yeah.
When people were gone.
Yeah. So about how people are gone and how the rats are just kind of, they're starving, they're angry. Nothing, I haven't read anything more about it. Like I said, I was just kind of rehashing some of those old stories, but we were considering at that point maybe the possibility of more leptospirosis in the city.
Right.
So that'll be interesting to kind of continue to watch. We talked about kind of mental health for people, and I think that mental health has been kind of a hot topic in the veterinary industry for quite some time now.
Right.
With a lot of veterinarians kind of struggling with, I guess,
student debt,
suicide, essentially is where it's all
ultimately
going.
Suicide. Mm-hmm.
But so mental health with this whole coronavirus thing, I think, you know, originally I had thought about like, gosh, it is really like giving me anxiety. But imagine if you truly had clinical anxiety or depression and then kind of countered on top of this. And then if you're in the veterinary practice and you're still working, I can only imagine how troubling it could be. So I think it's gained a lot of awareness, if you will. I watched, gosh, was it The View or something like that with Whoopi Goldberg not too long ago, and they were talking about mental health and that kind of thing. So again, I think the scare of corona has kind of fallen off a little bit, and so now we're starting to see all these like ripple effects of other things that are happening.
We've talked about the fact that we've seen more new pets come into the practice from day two. I was going to say day one, but it was about day two.
Right.
Of everybody being, homebound for whatever reason.
Yep.
I went to the park today, went for a run, probably saw a dozen dogs 10 weeks to, 20 weeks old.
So we'll see how that plays out for the veterinary community, right? So does that help us? Because I think people have really realized that their pets are truly a companion for them during this time, right? I think a lot of people already knew that, but more we're seeing, like, the pet was there for these people during this trying time. I think they're going to hopefully try to appreciate them a little bit more. And as I said before, like, appreciate them by offering them good health care, right? Like
taking care of them,
and not necessarily buying them a new collar or that kind of thing. And we've talked about, like, how love equals food, emotion equals that kind of thing, but, like, truly taking care of your pet.
That's a really good point. We chuckle about dogs that come in as quote-unquote therapy dogs, and to us they're not, but they probably truly are therapy dogs to the pet owner. You know, well, if it's
there's a lot of abuse. So you say chuckle, right? Yeah, laugh about it.
But. Yeah, a mastiff that comes in, he's got a therapy vest on so he can get on the airplane is what we think. But yet the bond, the reason most of us got into this industry is the human animal bond.
Absolutely.
And we don't often talk about it. We don't maybe always recognize it or verbalize about it, but that is truly what's going on, and that's why so many people went out and got new pets during the self-quarantine.
Right.
It did make them feel good. It gave them something to do. You and I, mm-hmm. and really the industry now, we're starting to see stories come out, very concerned about what happens when the pet owners go back to work.
Absolutely.
Separation anxiety, what is going to happen? Because more and more these pets are being humanized.
Right.
And I love pets. I love, other people's pets. But the bottom line is they are not humans to me. They are super great companions. They do give a lot of, love, affection, support back. But once you go a little bit too far, then it causes problems. And we've seen it in the past, and I think we're going to really see a lot of that moving forward.
Yeah.
So, but maybe I was kind of going with the whole support pet, support animal. I think that's an awesome point you just brought up. Like, show your love by not giving them fresh pet, Dick Van Patten, Rachel Ray dog food, because really, at least the latter two are not experts in nutrition for animals.
Right.
It's all marketing.
Most of them were on the list of those that were grain free and causing issues early last year.
And that's fine. Dress your pet up, get them a cool rain jacket, get them a nice harness, that matches your purse or whatever.
Right.
But that's a really good push. We need to push that message out. If you really care for your pet as much as you think you do, take care of your pet's health and surgical needs.
For sure.
So, anyway, rant.
Do you digress?
No, never.
Do you remember the first couple of podcasts that we had?
But we digress.
Yeah, that was our what is it, motto, our token sign. Oh, we digress. So a couple of other things kind of related to Corona. CE, so in the veterinary industry, we talk oftentimes about continuing education.
Right.
For both our veterinarians and our registered veterinary technicians, it is required every 2 years in the state of Georgia to get continuing education credits to kind of stay up beat on what's going on in the industry. And so it's interesting because originally a lot of these, so like you and I, we go to a conference every year. We go to Western. That is kind of like the...
And I'll hire usually as well.
Well, recently, yeah, in the past couple of years. So we'll go to two big conferences a year. But all the ones from like February, we were able to go to Western in February. But all the conferences between February and August have kind of been canceled or rescheduled. So I know there was a bunch of CVC ones. There was the Georgia VMA, the ECVC.
Yeah.
So what do you do if they're all canceled or rescheduled? I find it interesting that Georgia and in our state specifically, they have allowed all of your CE credits now to be online. So historically you had to have a mix of like in-person, online, webinar.
It was a max of like 25%, I think, online, if even that.
Yeah. So now you can get them all online. So a lot of these conferences have rescheduled, or they now have webinar versions. And so I think that's super interesting. And that's something that hopefully has, is good that came out of Corona, because to be honest with you, like, it is so much more attainable for most people to get their continuing education credits through a web platform.
Yeah. we're finding through Zoom meetings, you know, with our doctors, our lead team, and really our entire staff, that there's a lot of efficiency to be gained there.
Yeah.
So you were saying that. I was just looking at some of our news articles that we considered talking about, and the AVMA's Economic Summit, which is in October. They're taking that totally online.
Totally digital.
Yeah. So okay. And that's a long time away, right? That's 5-6 months away. Not quite six, but, or
yeah,
not six, but.
So to your point, we plan to go to the AHA conference in September.
Yeah.
Well, it's like late September, early October.
Early October. I don't know. Yes, it ends October 3rd. By the way, Rachel pointed that out to me a couple nights ago.
But at this point, we've not heard that it's been rescheduled or canceled or postponed or anything like that.
Yeah.
So time will tell, I suppose. But
do you remember the economist for AVMA? Is it Matthew Salyer, something like that?
I don't recall.
I met him last year in Indianapolis. He spoke at Connexity, but I don't see his name here. That was a digressed aside. But
the economist. Okay.
Yeah.
So kind of getting back on track with CE credits and that kind of thing, and what you're talking about with the Zoom calls, and so, again, looking positive and kind of looking through the coronascope here, like what has come out of it. I do think that we will, within our GVA group, allow more digital presence.
Participation, yeah.
Historically, we would have mandatory all location, all staff meetings on a quarterly basis. And so we haven't really looked too much into how it's actually going to work or function. But we used to require that everyone come and kind of pile in here at Russell Ridge Animal Hospital quarterly. So once every 3 or 4 months, and listen to new business or that kind of thing. And so I think it'll be really important, and hopefully we can get, we always had great attendance because it was mandatory, but hopefully we can get a lot more interaction per se,
right,
with people being able to participate from home, or maybe, you know, at their location, because, you know, like our Johns Creek Hospital, they drive 20 minutes to get here after work.
Without traffic.
An hour with. But maybe they could all do one digital at their location, stay there for the meeting or the duration of the meeting.
Yeah.
We used to provide food, so potentially we could provide food per location now.
But you're gonna miss a little bit of that human contact.
I'm not saying everything has to be that way, but I think coming out of
pre-corona,
I would have said never.
Yeah.
I don't think it's important. I think it's important. You need to
get
be
here
at this meeting. Your attendance is mandatory.
Yeah.
You're being paid for it. Like, why is this difficult to understand?
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm beginning to understand a little bit more about
technology,
I guess.
Technology has changed as well. And so now we can see who's there. We have a record of who's there. We can record the meeting. We can send it to them. We can come up with some little questionnaires.
Sure.
To make sure they're paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's going to be good that comes out of this whole pandemic situation for sure.
Yeah. So my last, I guess, corona topic that I remember us talking about is Tiger King. So a month and a half ago, I feel like the entire world watched the Netflix documentary about Tiger King. So it's basically this Joe Maldonado, something or another, and Carol Baskin were at this like decade-long war between each other. So he apparently went to prison. He was convicted on 2 counts of murder for hire. Apparently he had hired someone to murder Carol Baskin. And so he's serving 22 years in a prison. But earlier, like 1st of June, there was a court hearing, and the judge actually awarded Carol Baskin
the property?
Tiger King's sanctuary and property. I don't know what's happening with the pets that were there. I think there's a little bit of...
Was it nice? I, I, we've talked about in the practice, and like I tried to watch that thing three times. It's just it's a train wreck, which normally I like to see a train wreck, but I did not want to participate or view this train wreck.
So the sanctuary, I don't know. I mean, they showed you what they showed you, right? Mostly it was outside.
Where was
they
it,
showed
Colorado?
It's in like Oklahoma. It's somewhere in the middle of America.
Okay, Midwest. Florida Midwest.
Yeah, so Arkansas, maybe? I don't know. Anyways, so right after the show aired on Netflix, I guess his partner that he had sold to, I forget the guy's name, but he had like two wives and they just had a baby. They actually were running the sanctuary, and on their Facebook, they were getting more visitors than they knew what to do with. Like, this is right when Corona started happening and whatever. And so they were busier than they'd ever been because everyone wanted to go see this sanctuary that was just on this Netflix documentary. So then obviously Corona hit and they had to close down. And so I don't really know what's happening with the animals. I think the Humane Society of the United States has not necessarily ruled on who's getting the animals. Does Carol Baskin get the pets or does she just get the zoo? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
What's she going to do with it?
I don't know. But don't you think that's interesting?
Yeah.
Like this guy, they had so this big, huge tension.
So what was she suing him for to get that? I mean, that's the damages.
Yes, I do believe that she was suing him, but I'm not really sure. So it got real complicated. Like, his mom and dad were actually, like, owners of the property. It got real messed up. Okay. So we won't go down all of that, but I think it's interesting because we talked about it as, like, this Corona thing. It is something that we will always kind of look back on. To me, Tiger King and coronavirus kind of go hand in hand at a moment in my life. So the fact that Carol Baskin, who was his arch nemesis, actually now owns his property is just ironic to me.
Huh. Crazy.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, we talked a little bit about transitioning back to normal. And that's going to be...
Sorry, I think that's me.
What are you watching over there?
I was trying to read a news article and it had like, you know, like when you start like the New York Times, it has like a video usually that goes across the top. So my apologies, everyone.
Okay. No worries. Wow. Lost my train of thought. Word of the week.
What is the word of the week?
The word of the week. And this is for Graham and this is for Alan, our Covetrus rep.
Okay. Let's see what it is.
Cholecystoduodenostomy.
Wow.
Cholecystoduodenostomy.
Cholecystoduodenostomy.
Okay.
Wow.
So let's
are you impressed?
Down. Yeah.
Come on, tell me how impressed you are.
You've been practicing.
No, I didn't even know that was
so
the word of the week.
So the reason this is the word of the week is there's some history there. We talked about a cholecystectomy and something else that Alan brought up.
Anastomosis, is that how do you say that?
Anastomosis. Graham, I kind of chastised him a little bit about something that we looked at doing.
Well,
cholecystectomy
versus like, and he said gallbladder. You were like, well, technically it's bile. Anyways, that's the extent of chastising there.
Okay, so the reason this is the word of the week is I thought I was going to do one of these on a patient this past week.
Was it the same dog?
It was the same dog that Graham and I worked with a couple of weeks ago. We had to reoperate her, and we thought we were going to have to do a cholecystoduodenostomy.
So, based on my small amount of knowledge from this case, so basically this dog has an issue where its bile doesn't excrete from the gallbladder. Is that right? Something like that?
Kind of.
So you were basically going to give it an opening in the duodenum?
Yeah. So here we're going to get technical. So this dog was diagnosed and came to us with a diagnosis of post-hepatic biliary obstruction.
So after?
After the liver, the bile is not flowing where it needs to go.
Okay.
So biliary obstruction can be let's say you're jaundiced or icteric.
Mm-hmm.
It can be prehepatic, like if your red cells are being lysed. It can be hepatic.
Right.
Or it can be posthepatic. And so in this case, with the obstruction, you could have a hepatic obstruction or a post-hepatic. And so what she had going on a couple of weeks ago was a very enlarged gallbladder with elevated liver enzymes, elevated bile, and GGT enzyme. And we explored her, and when we got in there, we found what we thought was a huge pancreatic mass.
Mm-hmm.
And so I explained this to the owner, and he, very sharp guy, actually, or he just pretended to agree and act like he understood, but I think it was the previous of the two. Basically, bile flows from the liver through biliary ducts, and it ultimately goes to the common bile duct, and right at that point, your gallbladder can accept bile as a balloon or a receptacle vessel, if you will.
So that's the purpose of the gallbladder.
Yeah, so it's like this big balloon.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, the common bile duct goes to the small intestine, to the duodenum.
So there's a bifurcation at the common bile duct.
This is how I kind of explained it to him. Think about a tree
mm-hmm.
with a root system.
Right.
Turn that tree upside down.
Okay.
And the root system is in the liver.
Or it could be the branches, right?
Or the branches. Well, yeah. So there are... So anyway... And then
I'm just teasing.
The trunk of the tree, maybe halfway between the root system and the top, go ahead and just put a big old balloon coming right. off of that. And that's the gallbladder. And so that's kind of what we're talking about. And so this particular dog, we felt like had a pancreatic mass causing the obstruction. It was blocking the entrance of the common bile duct into the small intestine. So we biopsied. And then we closed her up.
You biopsied what you thought was the mass on the pancreas.
What we thought was a tumor. Well, the mm-hmm. biopsy came back as infection and inflammation and fibrosis.
Okay.
And
so just a really mad pancreas.
Yes. And so we kind of said, huh, she probably had a pancreatic abscess. She probably had pancreatitis. It abscessed. It ruptured. The body kind of sealed it over. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. She'd been eating well, but had not been gaining weight, and her values had gotten a little bit better. And so, I'll try to shorten this up a little bit. We wound up recommending that we reopen the dog because we felt like we needed to, since the liver part was working and the gallbladder was working, the common bile duct was working, but it's dumping into the intestine was not working.
Okay.
We felt like we needed to take the gallbladder and loosen it from its liver attachments, turn it about 180 degrees, and then surgically attach the gallbladder to the small intestine, to the upper small intestine called the duodenum, and make an opening about 2 centimeters long.
So do you call it duodenum? I have always learned it as duodenum.
It both.
Okay.
Depends on how I use it. So so that is a coli bile cysto bladder. Duodenostomy, duoden, upper small intestine, ostomy, opening or hole.
Wow. That's a lot.
It's a long story.
But you didn't do that, right?
So we didn't do that because it was great news. Once we got in there, the pancreatic quote-unquote mass was about a third the size it was before.
Okay, so no longer obstructing.
Yep, the small intestine was not as thick, and I could visualize all of the common bile duct and the ducts going into the
duodenum. And it's been now 4 or 5 days, and the dog's doing fine?
Yeah, she's doing well. She was kind of iffy for the first couple of days, but she's eating well. We did we'd have liver biopsies pending. I'm a little bit concerned that there's going to be some permanent damage in her liver, but it does appear that her bile is once again flowing. We actually expressed or squeezed her gallbladder to make sure that the bile went into the small intestine.
I have a question.
Okay.
In this regard, basically, so we know that a cholecystectomy or removal of the gallbladder is a possibility. Why wouldn't we just do that in the beginning? Because the dog...
That wasn't the problem. The problem was it wasn't... The problem wasn't gallbladder disease.
The issue, no?
No, completely not. The problem was between the gallbladder and the small intestine on the common bile duct. So you can take away the gallbladder. It does not make bile flow from the common bile duct into the small intestine.
So when you remove the gallbladder, you actually connect the common bile duct. Like, you just remove that balloon and you adhere it back together.
You remove it at what's called the cystic duct. So right before it dumps into the common bile duct.
And so it still is flowing then. So the common bile duct is still kind of connecting to the small intestine, and bile is still... It's just not...
Yes.
It's not just accumulating in a reservoir.
Away. Yeah, you're taking the reservoir or the balloon away.
Okay.
So had we taken the gallbladder out the first time,
mm-hmm.
and had we gone back and said, okay, well, it's not dumping, you know, and this was a 4-pound dog, still is a 4-pound dog. Had we taken out the gallbladder, should we have needed to do the cholecystoduodenostomy, we would not have had the gallbladder to do that, and that would have been the kiss of death.
Sure.
Because we couldn't reestablish biliary flow into the small intestine. So a little deeper than I wanted to get.
No, but that's
very
good
complicated.
News. So you can live without your gallbladder, but you can't live without bile. So it's not that your gallbladder is producing, it's truly just storing.
Storage, it kind of squeezes and pumps it into the intestinal tract when needed, typically fatty food.
Mm-hmm.
We had the discussion downstairs this week, actually. Okay, let's remember our physiology. Why do you need bile? Right, and I kind of went off on the endocrine, exocrine, pancreas with why you need your pancreatic enzymes, which you have a family member that needs supplementation there.
Correct.
And then we kind of remember, no, it's bile salts that do help you digest your food, mainly fatty.
All food. Yeah, I was going to say fatty foods.
So,
fat components. Well, that was a very educational word of the week. I think that's probably one of our best word of the weeks ever.
It's been very difficult during these times having phone conversations and trying to explain to owners, because I love to draw pictures or use illustrations, because
mm-hmm.
I really want my clients to know why we make the recommendation that we do and what the expectations are and you know, what's going to happen moving forward, instead of just saying, oh, we need to do surgery, period. So this kind of illustrates again, I think our struggles. So before you sign out,
okay.
Shout out to my mom, who I don't think listens to our podcast.
Oh no, why not?
And my stepdad, Buddy, who broke his hip a couple of days ago. So bless you. He's still in the hospital, but doing well. And so I hope both of them are going to survive this and do well and get their lives back to not like, I mean, I know they're going to survive. I saw that face. But
it was a face.
I think they're going to get through this and get their lives back to normal, yes. Hopefully relatively quickly.
I wish a speedy recovery for Mr. Buddy.
So.
All right, guys. Check in next week as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. Please subscribe to this podcast wherever you're getting it from. And if you'd like to share it or see a transcribed version, check on our website under our resources tab at mygavet.com. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.